Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidrishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, let's just start mostly translation here from the bottom of page 31. I've already done this, but I haven't systematically read it and translated it. So, Atma Tarahi Kaha.
Atma Tarahi Kaha.
Here, Tarahi means then. Like then, after you've said all of this, this neti neti, not this, not this. The Atma is different from this. The Atma is beyond this. The Atma is the sakshi, the witness of this. Creating this vyatireka, creating this viveka, really, this differentiation, showing what the Atma is different from other than. It's been very kind of thorough in doing that. So now that's been done. And then it says, then what is the Atma? Atma, tarahi, kaha. What is the Atma then? Okay. So now, he gives the whole definition, a definition that we call a lakshana. So this is the lakshana. Satchit Ananda Swarupaha.
Satchit Ananda Swarupaha.
So Satchit Ananda Swarupaha. It's a compound. Swarupa. This word, Swarupa. Rupa means either a form, like Namarupa, or it means one's own nature, the nature of something. Swa means one's own nature. So Swarupa is one's own nature. So what is the Swarupa? What is the Atma Swarupa? What is Atma's nature? And now the word, as this definition, Satchidananda. Anybody's heard Satchidananda? People have heard Satyam Jnanam Anantam from the Taittiriya Upanishad is the same, really. The Sat is Satyam, the Chit is Jnanam, the Anandam is Antam, so Satchit Ananda or Satyam Jnanam Antam. This is called a Swarupa Lakshana. Now, for something to be defined as a Lakshana, using this word Lakshana, it means that this definition can only land on one object, not on many objects. Like if you say the chair is blue, well, blue is not going to be a lakshana of chair, because there are many things that are blue, many different chairs that are blue, and many objects that are blue. So it's definitely not a lakshana. It's just a quality, a guna, of chair. It's a blue chair, so that's an adjective. It's a guna, a quality of this particular chair. It's not a lakshana. In fact, for objects in the world, it's very difficult to find a lakshana, something that operates as a lakshana, where it just is applying to that one given thing. So not easy to have a lakshana, especially if it's a swarupa lakshana. Swarupa lakshana means it is defining the very nature of the thing. There's a different kind of lakshana that we often use. It's called tatastha lakshana. And there we have that even in reference to Vedanta. In that case, the defining characteristic really has nothing to do with the swarupa, the nature of the object. And so let me give you an example. And yet it works, because this tatastha lakshana has to be, it's the defining characteristic of what you're pointing out, even though it's totally tangential to it. So that illustration that Swamiji often uses is in his village. There are just a little Brahmin village that has its temple, and so Swamiji lived right next to the temple. They shared a wall, in fact, right next to the temple. So, but if you look down the row of the houses, they're all exactly the same. You know, so you can't say looking down the the houses, one friend says to the other, look, let me show you my house. Now, here's like 20, 30 houses in a row, and they're all identical. Okay, so how is he going to point out which house is his? Because they're all the same. You can't say the one that has the red chimney, because they all have red chimneys. You know, the one that has a front door with three steps going down? All of them have that. It won't work. So in order to point out his house, he has to figure out something else. And so what he realizes is that all of those houses, only his has a crow sitting on top of the chimney. And so he says, do you see that crow on top of the chimney over there? Oh, yeah, I see the crow. Well, that's my house. That is my house. That's a lakshana, because no other house in that vicinity has a crow on the top of it. Right? There's a different type of definition. But then to define a house within samsara, or to find any given object and say that this definition is only good for that particular object is difficult. You should try it sometime. I did try it. I thought, oh, that's not so easy, you know. The testa lakshana is easy. Swarupa lakshana is not so easy, where it's just defining that one given object. So here in reference to the myself versus anything that exists within time and space, in a way, that is not so difficult, because there is only one self. There are not two selves. And so when we say that the Atma, yourself, that it's Swarupa, the Swarupa lakshana of it is Sat, Chit, Ananda, there really isn't anything else that can be defined in that way. And so here is how this definition works, just to start with. Sat means that which is existence itself, being itself. And that being, what is being, what actually is existence itself, is chit, is consciousness. So the sat is chit and the chit is consciousness, because it says sat chit ananda. Now here, as a compound, it's not that the chit has some sat or the sat has some chit. It's a karmadharya, where every single word is exactly in the same relationship to the other word. So the sat, the chit, the sat, sat chit ananda, the sat itself is chit, is consciousness. And the consciousness itself is chit, which means what? That chit and sat are identical. But, in this world, we experience conscious beings and inert beings. So you can say, this exists and it doesn't have any consciousness. This exists, it has no consciousness. This exists, but it's not chit. This exists, but it's not chit. I exist, but I have consciousness. So I'm sat chit. I'm a conscious being. But most of these things, so many things in this room are not sat chit. You can say this, the plant, if it's real. Mm-hmm. Still not sure. So we have these divisions, you know? We have divisions. But here, so we can't say that sat is chit and chit is sat. Because if sat is chit and chit is sat in reference to the world, then everything would be sat chit. And we don't experience it that way. In fact, in the end, upon analysis, you do recognize that there is nothing away from sat chit, but we're always looking kind of from inside. What has a sukshma sharira, a subtle body, enjoys consciousness. What doesn't seem to have a subtle body doesn't enjoy consciousness, but enjoys existence. So we have this dvaita in our mind, this duality in our mind. So the lakshana for my own nature has to include my being, which is consciousness, and my consciousness, the chit, which is being itself. And there is a third word, ananda. Now, in fact, all three of these words require differentiating each word from the thing they're associated with, including ananda. Like, for instance, if I say if I use existence, this thing exists, right? This exists, well, it exists for as long as it exists. right? The existence that it enjoys is time-bound because the object is time-bound. Still, I superimpose it, not realizing I'm superimposing existence on it. But just as a layperson, without any knowledge in particular, I will say that, yes, this object exists, this exists. Anything that I perceive, in fact, anything that is known to me, it exists. I give existence to absolutely everything. I don't really analyze it. It's just a fact that anything that is known to me, it exists because I experience it. So I give it existence. I don't go through a process of analysis saying, well, it exists now, but, you know, it's going to go into non-existence. That's not a Vedanta analysis. Before it came into existence, did it exist? It goes out of existence, then what happens to it? Does it really exist now? What is that all about? That's the analysis we do. As a lay person, we don't do that. We just take existence for granted because this thing is there and I'm aware of it, and so therefore it's just simple. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. But now they add on that existence is consciousness. Now that if we say that existence is consciousness in the world, we don't see them together. We would say, because we look at it from the inside, you are a conscious being, you are a conscious being, so the sat-chit is there, you are a conscious being, so the sat-chit is there. But I can't say that the floor is a conscious being, or that the rug is, or that the desk that we've used as an example is a conscious being, or that the lamp is a conscious being. I can't say that. But I don't realize that consciousness does not have to be just something that is revealed through a sukshma sharira, through a subtle body, for instance. The very fact that what I experience is known, that fact, just that, whatever I experience, of course it exists because I experience it. We're not talking now about satyamitya. We're just talking about it is here because I experience it. It exists because it is there. I see it through my sense organs. So it is. You know, it's not tucham. It's not non-existent. If it was non-existent, I couldn't experience it. Right? It's not there to be experienced. This is here to be experienced. And so I can say, yes, everything that I experience, it is. And I can prove it, actually, in a very simplistic way. So if I look at, like in the room in this experience, you name one thing that you're experiencing that you would say does not exist. That's not possible. And so I can go around the room and say, it is, 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 it is. How many times do you have to do that? We already know. We know that every single thing that we experience exists, right? But we divide up, as I was saying, the consciousness from the existence because you're conscious and the floor is, etc. But in fact, everything that I experience because it is known. So is and is known go together. You can't have something that is known that is not. So in fact, in that way, consciousness trumps everything. Because it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, and you can't say it's known that it doesn't exist. It either exists as satyam, which is my own being, or it exists as mithya. But still, I experience it, and I experience it because it is known. How can something be known without consciousness? So I can go around the whole room, not it is, just it is, but it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. And in that sense, consciousness, existence consciousness, is the common denominator of every experience internally or externally that I have. There's no exception. Even if you have a dream, if you have imagination, if you have a memory, it is, and if you have a thought, it is known. Both are there. Sat chit, right? But another interesting thing about this sat-chit, it is and it is known, is that the objects are objectifiable, right? I see you, I see you, I see you, subject-object relationship with all of the objects. Do I have a subject-object relationship with is known? Do I have a subject-object relationship with the existence, being, that I'm giving to every single object without exception, internally and externally? It is. It has been. It is. Can I objectify this isness, or from the standpoint of this object here, this body, mind, sense organs object, we would say, like I would say, he, she, it is, you are, I am. Right? That's just the language. So my own amness. You know. Can I objectify the beingness of all of you? I can objectify the nama rupa, the different forms, but can I objectify your existence? Or can I objectify my existence because I also am, I also exist, I have no doubt about it. I just don't know if the existence is temporal or not, if it's bound by birth or death or not, but there's no question that I am, that I exist. Now, I can objectify my body and my mind and my sense organs and the ahankara and all of my experiences, all of my relationships, easily objectifiable, subject-object. But what about my own amness, my own being, which is self-evident to me? You can't say, well, I can't objectify it, so I guess I don't have any being. Not able to do that. Because you are, you do exist. You know, I am here. I am here. I'm not going to say, I'm not here because I can't see my amness. No, I don't need to see my amness, my being. I am, I exist, not as an object, because I am the subject. You are all objects. I am the subject, right? And so if I am the subject, how can I become the object? How could that be? Really, honestly, I'm seriously. If I am the subject, and we're talking about subject-object relationships, if I am the subject, how can I then be the object? How is it possible? Because then who becomes the subject to illumine me, the subject, who is now an object, to this other subject? You don't have to even worry about it. You never even think about it because it's stupid. You know? We don't think about it because I am, I exist, and I'm the bottom line. I am the pratyekatma, I am the innermost subject. There's no one behind me, illumining me. Right? It's not there. There's not somebody else back there. Another awareness, illumining this awareness. Now just think about that for a minute. We have awareness, chit, consciousness, awareness, illumining awareness. So we have awareness illuminating awareness. That is a dilemma. And I'll tell you why. It's because from my standpoint, as me, the conscious being, space itself is objectified. Time is objectified. Like say you have a dream. The dream, space, air, fire, water, earth comes into manifestation. Are you aware of the space or not? Yeah, of course I'm aware of the space. I'm aware of all five elements. Are you aware of time? How could I not be aware of time? Of course I'm aware of time because there's change. The creation is changing and I'm the marker of time, really. So yes, I'm aware of space. I'm aware of time. Okay? And so that means that space itself is objectified. And for it to be objectified requires consciousness. To be objectified, it must be illumined. And so the luminary that I am, the conscious being that I am, can't be an object in the space, time, and all of the, you know, all the elemental, space, air, fire, water, earth, and all of the different nama rupas that are created out of that. Those things are all objectified. Time and space is objectified. And am I objectified? Not really, because I'm not an object in time and space that requires to be objectified, that requires awareness. I am the awareness. So now say, I am the awareness who is the one who, because of whom time and space are objectified, which is my experience, and I myself am awareness. That means I'm self-evident awareness. Now do I need a second awareness to come and illumine me the self-evident awareness. And so say you say, well, maybe I do. Okay, let's say we do. This is a problem. It's a problem because space itself is objectified. And so I'm not an object within space for there to be two. How can I have myself here, something in the middle, and another consciousness over here? That has to exist within space. That has to exist within duality for there to be two of me. But time and space themselves are objectified. The body is objectified. The mind is objectified. The buddhi is objectified. The sense organs are objectified. These are all maya. We're all maya here. This body, mind, sense organs, we're all part of the scene. Part of the scene of this creation. And these body, mind, sense organs, they enjoy existence, they enjoy consciousness as their innermost pratyekatma, as their innermost self. Each one of us, if we do this drisha, seer, seeing, viveka, we end up with me. But not me in the form of a body. Not me in the form of sense organs or mind. The mind is known. The buddhi is known. The ahankara is known. And that knownness enlivens the mind, the buddhi, the sense organs, so that they can perform their activities within the jnanendriyas. They can perform their activities within the creation. But me, the luminary, do I need anybody to illumine me? Well, if I did, we'd be in trouble. Because there's no time and space. There's no one there on this level of reality. On this level of reality, which is different than the mitya level of reality. In this level of reality, there is no time and space. There is only me, and there's not room for anybody else. Well, think of it. Here I am, just me, conscious being. There is no space. So even what's going to limit me, from my own standpoint, am I going to hit a wall over here, or a wall over here, or a wall up here? There are no walls. There is no space. So that means from my own standpoint, I simply am. My being simply is. And then you can look, as we'll do this in some contemplation, that my being, my amness, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being. But I only know myself really from within the language and the experience of the upadis, these conditioning adjuncts. And so from the standpoint of all these conditioning adjuncts, like my mind and my sense organs, then say my sense organs are pointing at the wall and I'm seeing this beautiful fabric against the wall there, and that fabric is known. Because my sense organs, my eyes, are able to give me a thought modification in my mind, which is true to that beautiful fabric. And so now I have a vritti of the fabric. And the vritti is known. Okay? The vritti is known. The fabric is known. Now, who am I in this? I'm just now where I said the fabric is known. Who am I? I'm not the known. I am the known fabric, but I don't take myself to be that yet. So now I have the known fabric, but what language do I use to account for me in this experience of this vritti, of this modification? I say this fabric is known and I am the knower of the fabric. That's my experience. If I look at in terms of any given vritti, there's the known object of the vritti, like the fabric, right? And then there's the consciousness which illumines the fabric. Right? But I don't talk like that. I don't say I'm the consciousness that illumines the fabric. Right? We don't say that. We say there's knower known. I'm the knower, that's the known. Because I have a mind and sense organs, I am able to know this fabric. And so that's how I divide up my experiences, so I get to remain as the conscious being. And the objects that are known by me. But, in reality, if we analyze our experience a little differently, the sat-chit, my being, my existence, just take my own amness, which is knownness, right? It is not doing anything other than being what it is. From the standpoint of me, conscious being, I don't have a mind and sense organs. I illumine the mind and sense organs. And so this mind and sense organs, which are both objectified and the fabric, look at what is actually taking place. My mind, because it is consciousness, is known. What we mean by that is that it's self-evident. It is known. If I took away the whole creation and all knower-known relationships, I am known because I am consciousness. And so the experience self-evident is something that is self, just to know how this word known comes about here. If consciousness is self-evident, self-shining, kind of like the sun is self-evident and self-shining, it doesn't need another sun to come in and light it up. I'm not doing anything to exist. I'm not doing anything to exist, and I'm not doing anything to be self-evident. I'm consciousness, and since I am consciousness, I exist. And as consciousness, the ultimate in terms of subject-object relationships, I can't go any farther, and time and space itself are objectified, so I'm hanging out here by myself, you know, free of time and space. Time and space is objectified, and within time and space we have all of these little people running around, and all of these little people have minds and sense organs that allow them to perceive objects. So we have all these knower knowns running around. Okay. Well, we have to remember something about this. All of these known things in the creation, from the standpoint of the jiva, all of them are known via my mind and sense organs. That's how I know them. That's what makes this the waking state. I can close all of this down and then just have an imagination. That's like the dream state. But here in this waking state, everything I see, all of you, in fact, you are all known to me. You're all known to me because of my mind and sense organs. And the whole thing, everything I look at, it is and it is known. But there's something else that is and is known. My body is, and it is known. Right? My sense organs are, and they are known. My mind is, and it is known. The buddhi is, and it is known. So what that means is both the objects that are known, the things that are known, are illumined by awareness, and the knowers are illumined by awareness also. Your mind and your sense organs, those are responsible for knowing. Are they known or not? Say, well, yes, they're known. Is the vritti known? Are the vrittis known? Yes, they are known. And so actually, the truth of your experience is that whatever is known, whatever is the object in the vritti, that is known. And the mind itself, the vritti itself is known. Right? And there is no experience of a knower. That's just a word. There is no experience of a knower. Let me show you. What? You think there's an experience of a knower because you have the word and that you use that word to divide up knower known. You're the conscious being and nothing else is. But actually, everything, the knower and the known, both are known. Right? So where is the knower? Where is the experience of a knower? It's an amazing thing to realize that we have constructed this word and we believe in it, but there is no such experience. Okay. So let me just show you, because it's very nice to understand, because it makes everything else kind of work if you get this. So you're looking forward, I'm looking this way. So you use this wall, and I'll use that wall. Okay, okay, so for us, all of us, the wall that we're running into with our sense of sight, that is known, right? That is known. All of the people that you're seeing in between this wall and that wall, or this wall and yourself, let's say this wall and your own body, mind, sense organs, all of these are known. So that wall is known, the space and all of the people in the space, the floor, the ceiling, all of these things, the wall is in, all of these things coming forward, all of them also are known, right? Clear. They are and they are known. They are and they are known all the way. There's no exception. No exception at all, actually. And then we get to this body. This body is also my body, your body, okay? Your body is also known. It's true. It's known. Why is it known? Well, it's known because I have sense organs and a mind, so therefore it is also known. And then I say, and your sense organs are also known. You know, if they work or if they don't work, you know, if you're blind or you're deaf or you can hear or whatever it is. Yeah, my sense organs, I can focus on them, my mind can focus on them. And when I pay any attention to them, I ask you, are they known or not known? Oh, they're known. So now look at the experience. From the wall to the body, to the wall to the clothes, okay, the wall to the clothes, all of these things are known. That's the experience. The clothes are known. Yes. The body is known. That's my experience. Notice the is known. They're known. Why? Because of the sense organs. But what do I experience? Do I experience the knower, or do I experience the known? What is the experience? These sense organs, true, I have these instrument sense organs that allow this body to be known. My experience is that it is known. All of this up to here, it is known. The sense organs, they're working or not, etc., focus on them. They also are known, these instruments, they are known. That's my experience, that they're known. Okay. All of the thoughts, the manas, all of the vrittis, without exception, all of them are known. The chitta, the memories are known. That's my experience. Right? So in reference to the mind, what is my experience? It is known. What is my experience in reference to the vrittis? The vrittis are known. The thoughts are known. Well, I'm still looking for a knower. Right? I'm talking about your actual experience. The vrittis are known. The buddhi, your definite, you know, conclusions. Those are definitely known. The ahankara. I am doing this, I am doing that, I'm going here, I'm going there. All of, whatever. I am this body. The ahankara. It is known. Your knowledge is known. Your ignorance is known. Your relationships are known. Time is known. Space is known. You are known. Are you not known? Me, the conscious being? Of course I'm known, because I'm consciousness. So what I'm saying here is that now, try to find an experience of the knower. You only have an experience of the known. In fact, you can even say like this, you have an experience, non-objectifiable, of the self. Satchit. Conscious being, consciousness. Consciousness is self-evident, it is known. And so my being, which is consciousness, which is self-evident, and so self-shining, and we can use the word known, it is known, because you can get rid of the whole creation, and it is still known because it's self-evident. Everything shines after this self-evident knownness, which is me, right? Now, when you say that, we're talking about all of the things that I objectify and call the known, as well as all of the instruments of knowledge, like your sense organs and mind, that we call the knower. Actually, those are also known. And there is no experience of the knower, of knowing, of the knower. There's no knowering. There's only the known, you see? There's only known. And that knownness is me. Because now I ask, okay, we see all of these things. All of these things are known. The time is known. The space is known. Everything is known. Let's look at the knownness. In all of this, where's the knownness? What does it look like? Let's objectify the knownness. Because I'm objectifying all you, I might as well objectify the knownness. Let's objectify the existence too, just throw everything in the pot. But we can't. You can't do that. It's not subject to objectification because it doesn't exist within time and space. It has no arms and legs. It has no sense organs. It has no mind. All of those functional aspects that exist within Maya, within the creation, do not belong to me. I am completely free of all of that. And yet, I am the fundamental experience that this whole creation enjoys. I am fundamentally what is here as being and as being as existence, knownness. To understand the profundity of this, I love the dream. I love this one little big fat Achilles heel of the dream. It's that moment when you wake up from the dream. When you wake up from the dream, what has happened at that moment of waking up the dream from the dream is absolutely cataclysmic. It's like the end of the world. The end of the dream world. The end of the world has taken place. Mm-hmm. It has gone into pralaya. Okay. All of the beings are gone. All of my friends are gone. I am gone. This upadhi is gone. Everything, every single thing, gone. And what is your experience? Nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. Nothing has happened because what is the fundamental truth of what is here is not an object of Maya. It is a different order of reality. It is satyam. Satyam. That trikala, abhidhita satyam, that satyam is untouchable. It is not subject to any type of negation in past, present, or future. Nor do I ever experience any negation of myself, ever. You never experience any time in reference to yourself. You experience time in reference to these upadhis that are part of the dream. You never experience time in reference to yourself. You just simply are. That's why Swamiji says, you are the presence of time. Right? And you experience it that way. You never experience past, present, and future. You only experience the present. You're never outside the present, right? You can remember the past. You can imagine the future. But when you remember the past, you're remembering in the present. When you imagine the future, you're imagining in the present. If you divide the moment that you're thinking of up into little tiny spaces and say, well, this is past, this is future, then you have a little tiny moment. Yeah, you're the present of that moment. Mm-hmm. However big the moment, however small the moment that exists from the time, doesn't make any difference. You are the presence of that. For you, there is no time, there's no space, there's nothing to divide up. And that is your swarupa, that is your being. So we say, I am my being, non-objectifiable, not an object within samsara, not an object within this creation. It can't be an object. Try to make it one, it's not possible. It's not an object, and yet there is nothing that's away from it. So to think, that's why in the Mandukya Upanishad, we use so much the dream as a drishtanta, as an illustration. Because then you can understand that the dream, or your imagination, you can see very clearly, there's nothing in that dream, including the whole dream itself, that is has any distance from your being. Your being is the adhishtana, the truth of that dream. And you can recognize it, especially when you wake up. Now here, you're not going to wake up from this, but the viveka will still be there. Because this is Ishwara's dream and you're part of it. So imagine you're having a dream and the characters in the dream are getting taught Vedanta. It's a dream guru in the dream, right? And so all of this is being taught. But they have to realize that, you know, the dreamer is the Ishwara of the dream. And when the dreamer wakes up, the whole dream goes. But the little characters in the dream are being dreamt. They're not the dreamer. They're not the Ishwara of the dream. Yeah. But they can still gain knowledge of who they really are, because there is only one conscious being. And that conscious being is the self of the whole dream and is the self of every being, every sukshma sharira, every subtle body that has a mind and sense organs to reflect it and go down, I, me. They don't realize that for them, for all the little dream characters, their ahankara identifies the me, the one me that is the self of the whole dream, and itself is non-dual, it's not big or small because it's free from time and space. So the very me that is the self of the dream, this very me, free of time and space, free of size, is the self of all beings within it. Okay? They don't know that. They all think, I am the self, I am the self, I am the self, I am the self, which is correct. They are the self. Their sense of self is only that one being. That is true. But what they don't know is that myself is in fact the self of the whole creation and is free of time and space. That they don't know. But the self-experience is the very experience of the self that is the self of the whole creation. They have to gain that knowledge. It's kind of a big task. You can feel sorry for the guru. how far we have to... And every teacher is a student. There's a parampara. Every teacher has been a student. It goes back to Ishwara, according to the tradition. But just imagine what the recognition is. There's a viveka that has to take place, a discrimination that has to take place, so I can recognize, differentiate my being that is timeless and changeless, non-objectifiable, and therefore understanding my experience like it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. There's no place where I'm not. And I can differentiate this non-objectifiable being, which the whole creation is enjoying. Every experience I have is enjoying that reality of myself. Because there's nothing that is away from the Sat-Chit. Nothing. You can't have an experience on any level that is away from the Sat-Chit, conscious being. And I have to recognize that conscious being is the luminary, in a sense, of this whole projection, this whole infinite dream, Bhagawan's dream, as though, you know, just as a longer, bigger joke, Swamiji will say, than your little dream. Bhagawan's got a great big dream. You're included in it. But your little dream isn't so little when you're dreaming it. That's a big dream. The dream is big. It's only when you wake up you think, oh, I had my little dream and you had your little dream. But when you're dreaming it, it's a universe. It's a creation. You know, a lot going on in there. You know? But who are you in all of that? The one who is there is the self of the little dream is the self of the big dream. It's not two selves. It's not a big Brahman, a big self illumining the big creation, and a little self illumining the little creation, because you're free of time and space. There's no big or little. It doesn't apply. So this is what has to be understood. Who are you? Who's the Atma? The Sat-Chit. And then Ananda. The Sat-Chit Ananda. The Sat-Chit Ananda is a little something I want to spend time on. So I'm going to just leave that aside. We'll do it in the morning. I want to say something else about where we're moving to. Why this is Vedanta. Why Vedanta? Why it's Vedanta? Because we're not done. It's not just about differentiating myself from the body, mind, sense organs, you know, and then recognizing I have a timeless self that's free from time. It's recognizing my place in this creation, the place of this body, mind, sense organs in this creation, what this creation is, how it comes about, how it comes into manifestation, it sustains and goes back into unmanifest condition, you know. What is the relationship of myself to this creation? And what is the relationship of the creation to me? What do we mean by Ishwara? What is the relationship of myself to Ishwara? What is the relationship of this body, mind, sense organs to Ishwara, to Virat? to the Ishwara Stula Sharira, to the, and if there is an Ishwara, right? Is there an Ishwara? Right? This is an inquiry. Is there an Ishwara? What is this creation? And how does this body, mind, sense organs fit into this creation, fit into Ishwara? Otherwise, you have to go be in a cave or something, because how can you just live here in an inert creation, walking around? You know, you're responsible for your life. You've got to make it or break it, buddy. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out a way to get through this life, whether you're a jnani or not. You've got to make your way through this life. And it is a hard task. You have all these kind of notions. Jnani doesn't care about any of it. Because it's not like that. It's like the dream character saying, what am I going to do? What happens next? Just say, ask Bhagavan. ask the dreamer. Ask the dreamer. In a dream? Ask the dreamer. It's not your dream, it's the dreamer's dream. You're part of the dreamer's dream. You know? So for us, it's ask Bhagavan. What's going to happen next? Ask Bhagavan. But we have to understand all that in depth. Otherwise, there's no real freedom. There's a place of rest. So Vedanta is not just finding, differentiating myself from the upadis, the body, mind, sense organs. That's not Vedanta. That's essential. And many of the prakriyas are all about that, so that then I can recognize this body, mind, sense organs as part of Ishwara, and that Ishwara is myself. Or I am, let's put it this way, I am the self of Ishwara. So there's more to go. So the next section is like, this was all on the jiva and doing this jiva viveka, between the Atma and Atma Viveka, so the self-not-self differentiation. That's what we've been doing. The Adhikari and now this. And now we move into understanding the creation and my place in the creation. Very beautiful. It's a very cleverly done book.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.